Triple M Footy lives on Listener. Thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water. Triple M rocks the NRL. Breaking news, the big opinions, last minute goss from inside the locker room. If it's NRL news you need, get it right here. For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Yes, g'day everybody. Love to have a company for just 2 hours today, and so much to squeeze into those 2 hours we get to share with you. My name's Tony Squires, joined by Ryan Girdler, Brent Reed, and making his right run-on debut for the show, Todd Carney. Welcome, Todd.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It's exciting turning up here this morning. I'm up with the big guns. How good?
we can bring you down to our level pretty quickly, I'd imagine.
It's a drop in grade, that's for sure.
It is. How are you going? You tore your bicep.
Yeah, I ruptured my bicep 6 weeks ago, trying to hold on to the dream of playing. And the reality hits that it's all done now, which is good because I'm enjoying my coaching and stuff like that. So it's giving me an opportunity to sort of sit back and go, okay, now it's time to hang the boots up. And as my mum said after the game, she came and watched, she was in Sydney, and she said, I'll be burning those boots, thanks. I'll take them up with me. You're not taking them home.
Because you were captain coach there for a couple of seasons. Now you've just transitioned to coach. How are you finding the change up?
Different. So two Sundays ago was our first game, and my partner hit me up. She goes, how do you feel? And I said, I'm a little bit nervous because I'm coaching now, and I want to obviously be a good coach, but I demand more from the boys because when I'm out there, I play to my strengths. But when I'm not there, I want them to go to their strengths and extra efforts and stuff like that, where I probably couldn't get around the field as much. But it's really good. I'm enjoying it. It takes the pressure of me wanting to play and playing because I'm 38, I probably shouldn't be playing, but I enjoy it. So now I'm getting that sort of rush out of the coaching, which helps, and it gets me through it.
The bigger dreams, Toddy? The bigger dreams of coaching in the NRL one day?
Oh, I don't... Yes and no. Not at that highest level of a head coach. I'd love to be in a system somewhere. I just started on Wednesday this week at Keebra Park. I'm there full time for their rugby league hours, overseeing their rugby league from year 7 to year 12, then working with their A and B team. So
who are they linked exciting. With now, Toddy? They're
linked with
link?
South now.
South.
So they've got 370 boys in their rugby league program. So I do about 25 hours a week there now. So I just started Wednesday, and my first few days was really good. So it's exciting for me to obviously work with the younger kids that they're not far off. They're all signed from different clubs. South is their mother club, and it's a really big school. Then they've unearthed some really good talent. Reece Walsh, Benji Marshall from Feeder. There's a list on the wall in their gym. It's crazy to look at the players that have gone through. I think in the Titans team at the moment, there's 10 players that went through the Keebra system. So it's a really good school for breeding ground.
And I can't believe that the Titans haven't got hold of that development, that Pathways program coming through. South Sydney do.
Well, they had it for a while, and then South took it. And then South have also took the Townsville Blackhawks from the Cowboys. So they're trying to get their way up in there. They've got like their own little academy up here now, the South do, with their contracted players. And it's a big one for South. And then for Brisbane, they stole Burley off Titans too. So it's a worrying sign for the Titans there.
Circle back. I love the captain coach thing. Remember the captain coach in the NRL or in rugby league in that
King
day?
Wally. Was King Wally King the last?
Graham Langlands captain coached Australia from memory as well. But it's obviously two jobs you probably can't hold together.
No, not in the modern game, Tone. It's funny watching guys like Toddy, though, when you've covered them their whole career and they become coaches as Carmichael, Ben Teo, all these guys now are coming through. It's good to... Good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Wade Graham is usually sitting in that chair, Todd. He revealed to us he's a bit of a chef. He's going to start, giving us recipes once a week. How are you in the kitchen there?
I'm not bad in the kitchen. I was actually talking to Wade on FaceTime this morning. He's at LIV Golf. How good, living it up. Enjoying yourself. But
he told us it was acceptable? Another work commitment.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks for spilling the beans.
I put him in the trouble.
Well, that's how you get a job around here.
Just stole his seat.
Yeah, totally.
Unlucky Wade. But yeah, I don't know. I'm okay in the kitchen at the moment. I'm just doing a cleanse at the moment. So I'm sort of not eating too much and all organic meat, really. So, and my missus hates it. She hates all the smell of the cooking in the house. So,
you're doing a cleanse. Reedy's on a diet as well because he's trying to fit in. What you got? Medium size for the Olympics outfits you've got to wear.
We're getting an outfit. We have to give them our sizes, and I went medium. Just so, gave me something to aim for, Tone.
Right.
Some motivation.
What event are you representing us in, Reedy?
I mean, what do you need an outfit for? Give us outfits. We're a teammate. Even the media, we're a team when you go away.
You're kidding,
kids.
Really? Yeah.
Triple M should give us outfits when we go to
they
Magic
used to.
Round.
Like when we first started, they gave us this old hard yakka Triple M shirt, but that went by the by. As soon as, you know, producer Charlie got involved, the budget just got really tight.
He was skimming off
really
the top,
tight.
Charlie,
What sports are you covering at the Olympics? What's your expertise?
Well, I was going to do Ollie Roos, but they missed out, so that was a bit unfortunate. I'm doing I made a massive blunder, Tone. I'm doing athletics rugby sevens, a bit of boxing.
I'm doing golf, actually. There you go.
But I made a massive blunder because I told the bosses at work that John, you remember John Gosher, the referee?
Yeah.
He's now the CEO of Equestrian. So I told the blokes at work, so they put me on Equestrian.
I'm doing horse riding.
I've got no idea. Absolutely no idea at all.
Wait, you're the dressage expert,
yes. And the four-day competition, whatever they call it.
The team's competition.
The team's competition. What a blunder
that
was.
Make sure that outfit fits because there's going to be a lot of sitting around doing nothing, Reedy.
It's just some polo. Give me some shoes and phones.
Well, they shouldn't change. You should be all right with your size for your shoes.
Yeah, but shirts, polo, shorts.
Yeah. Polo shorts.
Yeah,
are you the flag bearer for the media?
Just have a look at some of the results. Manly 32, the Eels 18. We had the Storm 54 over South Sydney 20. The Roosters and the Dragons also played, but we won't go into detail on that. I loved that. Anzac Day, it's such a special time and that ceremony and all of that. And I was there at Allianz Stadium.
Very early
it was
time.
Great. I had a fantastic time. I was sitting next to Jeff Carr was there, Craig Young, one of my heroes. And then they kicked off and it all went to you know what.
What didn't you score first? I thought
we
it was
did.
A
great
start
try
for the Dragons.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. And then you just, first couple of minutes, Tone, then go to the bar. You've learned that over the years, right? Being a Dragons supporter.
The lift downstairs with John Howard.
Did you?
He was there as well, mad Dragons fan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Bit of name dropping.
Couldn't get the job done. We're going to go into all of those details. Reedy, what is in terms of news, injuries, charge sheet, where are we at?
The most significant news out of the Anzac Day games was Tane Mill, two to three matches for that.
That was a terrible tackle.
Huge news out of last night, though. If you're a Manly fan, Dally Cherevins and Hamoli Olakau'atu both charged over that lifting tackle on Sean Lane. They're both looking at 2 to 3 games. So that's significant for Manly, given where they are in the ladder. And they've got Cameron Dolphins next 2 weeks. Dolphins over Magic Round. So those guys both could be absent for that.
There seemed to be a different level of responsibility in that tackle between Daly.
Well, it's not often Daly, you get two guys charged, Tone, at one
and
tackle.
And Daly wasn't, he didn't get sin-binned. Olakau'atu did. It would seem much more his responsibility to that tackle.
Well, they might look to maybe fight that, maybe get Daly downgraded because obviously he's so important to them. But both looking at 2 to 3 games, so pretty significant for Manly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the other, Ryan Madison and Micah Sivo both just facing fines for Sivo was for that ugly elbow at the end of the game that probably ruined the game for Parramatta. So just fines for those two guys.
Just fines. He may not be in first grade.
No, that's true.
Get a hat-trick of tries and still get dropped.
Well, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, it totally was.
We'll get to that.
Sad news, obviously, for rugby league community. Terry Hill passing away at the age of just 52, Gerd. So sad.
Yeah, I think the whole rugby league sort of world went into mourning when they heard that because he was just such he was larger than life, Tez. You know, everyone, if you didn't know him, you knew of him and everyone's got a story about Tez. I was fortunate or unfortunate enough to have to play against him my whole career.
Yep.
Spent some wonderful times with him in Origin camp room with him one time in there and he just had that that knack of just, putting perspective into every situation, like, whether it was the heat of battle, whether it was, getting ready for a game, whether it was, reading the room and just cracking a joke at the right time. Like, just one of the most annoying guys you could ever be around, but everyone wanted to be around him.
Yeah.
He was just that kind of guy. And I just remember, you know, playing like the ultimate competitor, like a real character off the field, but serious when he crossed that white stripe. And I just remember every time, you know, I'd have to play against him all week, I'd be thinking, don't make an error because you're going to hear about it all game. He was that guy. And then when he turned up with Hopewadi and, you know, that was their right side and you were playing left side, it was always an interesting day at the office. So, yeah, commiserations to him and the family, a wonderful man, brilliant human, and I'm just so, you know, privileged to have spent some quality time with him.
Last weekend, all eyes were on the Eels as they took on Manly. First half, it was strong enough. But once again, the second half proved their undoing. 32 points to 18. Manly got the job done. But Todd, did you see anything like positive signs coming out of the game for the Eels?
The positive sign is the young half that debuted last night, Ethan Sanders. It was positive for me, but maybe not a positive for Parramatta because there's talk that he's not staying there. But I thought he'd done his job. I thought it freed up Dylan Brown enough to see a little bit more of Dylan Brown, where the last few weeks there's been a lot on Dylan Brown's shoulders and he hasn't performed. Where last night I'd seen him free him up a little bit, and young Ethan was I thought he was good for a debut game. Obviously, they didn't get the win, but he'd done his job, and I thought he'll build on that and get better.
He was nice and direct in attack, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was, and you can see that he's always talking, where Dylan Brown's not a massive talker, where Ethan was talking a lot, so that would take the pressure off. And even though it's not hands-on all the time, that talk can sometimes release Dylan Brown's thoughts around what he's got to do, and sometimes you just got to run the ball. And he's seen that a little bit last night, so hopefully over the next few weeks, that partnership develops until Mitchell comes back.
Good.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching the young fella play. I mean, bit of a daunting task playing on the left edge against Manly. Ola Kawatu is going to be coming at you all day, and Manly made sure that that's what happened. But yeah, just some of his nuances around his halves play, like whenever whenever his halves partner in Brown was kind of called out on fourth or fifth play, the young guy would find his way in there, make sure they got to a kick. I think you probably stood, as you do on debut, you stand back a little bit and you just sort of make sure you don't get in the way. But I thought he did that really well last night, and definitely some positives there for the Raiders, because I think that's where he signed with for next year. But they were a lot better. I mean, they were in the game until the 70th minute. And then obviously the decision from Mike Acevo to go to town on Ruben Garrick's face with his elbow was just the most ridiculous thing. They fought their way back in. It looked the Manly were the better side in the second half, after, you know, fighting back to what was an Eels, a pretty good lead going into halftime. It might have been 14-6. So Manly shot out of the gate in the second half, but for Mike Acevo just not to have the experience to understand how important that situation was tells me that he's just not in the right frame of mind, because that was a crucial stage of the game and he got that so wrong.
Yeah, I'm with the boys. I think Ethan Sanders is the one real positive to come out of for Parramatta. And you wonder why he wasn't there earlier. I mean, I think a few of us asked that question in recent weeks when he tried Blaise Talungi there, then he tinkered with Dejan Arce there, and eventually he's given Ethan Sanders a go. And I'm with Todd. I think he frees up Dylan Brown because he just organised things. Dylan Brown could just run the footy. The one thing I would say is I don't know why he didn't kick goals. They couldn't kick a goal last night at Parramatta, and Ethan Sanders is a goal kicker. And Gutho was shocking. He's just spraying everything. So that's the bit I find
probably
bemusing.
Just trying to take a little bit of pressure off him, Rudy, rightly or wrongly, which end up kind of costing him in the end because Gutho's injured. You know, he's a decent goal kicker, but he doesn't look like he's 100% at the moment. So they probably didn't want to throw a young guy into the halves, playing a Brookvale capacity crowd and say, here, I might have the goal kicking as well.
Yeah, but even when
but
he missed a few,
they probably should have.
Even when Gutho missed a few, they went with Dylan Brown.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Surprised me to see Gutho even kicking, because last week when they played the Dolphins, he took a kick in front, which is obviously not hard, but you have to just give it a kick and he reeled away from it. Like his knee was really bad or his hip or whatever it is. But yeah, it was strange that he was even had the job to start with.
Yeah. Well, after Brad Arthur absolutely put it to his team after the last weekend, it was always going to be interesting to see what he came up with in the post-game press conference. Let's have a listen to him, obviously, sitting alongside Captain Clinton Gutherson about the performance and also about that Sivo sin bin.
Well, I won't lie, I was concerned after last week with the lack of effort, and now we fell in a massive hole. So initial thoughts is that we haven't lost the footy team, they're still there. And now we've just got to decide, you know, we talked about it again, we've got to decide if it's full time, all the time, with that effort, that courage that we showed. And if we keep doing that, we'll fight our way out of it. But I thought that in the second half, we probably beat ourselves.
That was a big flashpoint moment with Micah being sin binned. How did you see it?
No, it's dumb, isn't it? 2018, we're in front 4-3, I think. 10 or 11 minutes to go. So I tackle 4, and they put a kick up, and hopefully we get the ball back.
Guthrie, you shook your head then when Jimmy asked about Micah Seed. What were your views on?
No, just stupid.
We're right in the game. It's 10 minutes left. We just got Will back on. Last tackle, we catch the ball. We give ourselves a chance. Silly things at the moment that are really hurting us. Just missed tackles, penalties against us. Can't do that in NRL games. It doesn't matter who you're versing. Can't do that in NRL games.
Look at you, Rudy, opening him up like a can of worms there.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, obviously Mitchell Moses is a key for them, but they've got a tough draw coming. They've got a bye this week. Then they go Brisbane Storm. And, you know, I think Mitch is hopeful of being back sooner rather than later, but it's a tough period. And, you know, you lose those two games, your season's basically over. Now, they're still in the mix at the moment. They're sort of clinging on, but you lose those two games, it's a long, long way back for Parramatta.
Pressure on the coach still? Has it eased at all?
Well, no, because they lost. I think there's going to be pressure on him while ever they're losing. And if they keep, you know, obviously the bye gives them a chance and him a chance to take a breath, and they come back. And as I said, Brisbane Storm, two really tough games. They lose those two. I mean, the pressure just intensifies. But I've said it before, Tone, they're not a reactive club. They're a very, very considered club. They do things there's no knee-jerk reactions there. Yep. They'll think about it. They'll go through the front door with Brad. If they make the decision to move on from Brad, they'll go to Brad first and say to him, mate, we're going in a different path. And then they'll go down whatever path that is. But they won't be reactive.
Ryan, for Manly, it wasn't a complete performance, but they got the job done.
Yeah, it's been a pretty tough campaign. They lost those two games against the Eels and the Dragons, and then they got up for that home win against the Panthers, which they played really well. Then they had to go to New Zealand, played the Warriors, found a draw over there, probably should have won that one, had a tough game last week against the Titans. And I just feel like they went into last night, they were a little bit flat, so I really wasn't surprised that Parramatta sort of came out of the blocks and Manly took their time to find their rhythm. But just those key guys, those senior guys, you know, with Tommy, Daly, Croker, Jake there, you know, they just, once they found their rhythm, and Brooks as well, once they found their rhythm, they were just kind of always just, you know, going to go on with it, do the simple things right. They built the foundations there early in the second half, and then when the opportunity came, they probably weren't as crisp as they have been in the past, especially in the first half. But they're just a really mature footy side, and they can just, you know, win different ways, and they needed to win a different way last night. They did so. I think they now get the bye, or they get a couple of days off and they have a little bit of a rest. And, you know, I think they'll be ready to go again. So they're in a good spot, Tone, you know. Like, I think if you're an Eagles fan at the moment, you're pretty excited about what lays ahead for their season.
Where are you putting them, Toddy? Are you happy with how they're travelling?
Yeah, I'm happy with how they're travelling. Their wins when they've won have been really good. The losses is a concern sometimes, but with their players that they've got, as Gurz just mentioned, they're star five players. But the big test is for them coming up in the next few weeks around Origin. So they'll lose Cherry. They'll lose both the Trbojevic's. So they'll lose some depth there. So they'll have to work out what they've got there and try and scrape some wins while they're away. But I think at the back end of the year, if they can mix it all together and then five blokes play well every week and their combinations with the rest of their team is really good, they'll cause troubles in the finals. But a big thing for me, Manly, is Ruben Garrick's goal kicking. He hardly misses.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's playing well too. Mm. But yeah, I like Manly. I think with players like where you got Cherry Evans and Tommy at the back, if you got them two players in a team, your finals bound if everything else falls into place for you.
And what have you made of Luke Brooks's performance there?
I think he's been really good. It's good to watch as a former half, watching a bloke that sort of was under pressure for so long when he was at the Tigers. He was their main man. He had to be everything, where it's good to watch Manly play and Brooksy not have to take any of the pressure. Daly's their boss and their leader, and he does that job really well. Where for Brooksy, he just sits on his side of the field. He picks when he has to run or pass. And he seems happy, looks happy, where when he was at the Tigers, he was down and out for a little bit, and rightly so with how it was going. But it's really good to see, and I'm really excited to see how his development goes on beyond this year. Obviously, he's really good this year, but I want to see how he develops in the next few years, learning off Cherry, and then once Cherry sort of steps away, how he takes leading that team, because that's where I see it will happen. Cherry will leave, and then it will become Brooksy's team. So it'll be interesting to see what he learns off Cherry over those next few years.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
South Sydney, the pressure continues to mount, beaten 54-20 by a terrific team, obviously, in the Melbourne Storm on Anzac Day. The pressure on coach Jason Demetriou has been building. None of that would have eased after that.
No, and they've got a board meeting Tuesday night, South Sydney. Russell Crowe's back in town. I'd imagine Jason's future will be on the agenda. And we'll have to wait and see how it pans out, Tony. But obviously the pressure just ramps up every time they lose. And when they lose like they did, it just intensifies it all.
Naively, I thought season 2024 would be one where no coach loses his job, where there would be no nominations for the Daly M Interim Coach of the Year at the end. But it doesn't seem – what's your gut feeling, though, with this one?
My gut feeling is, look, I just think they need to give him some clarity. And my gut feeling is they might say to him, you can finish the year off, but we'll move on at the end of the year. And then he'll have a decision to make about whether he hangs around. But I think they're going to move on. I just think it's at a point where, I wouldn't say it's untenable, but things just don't seem to be getting better. So there's no obvious guy to come in now. I mean, Mel was, Mel obviously got mentioned, but Mel's was sort of removed himself from the equation now. Michael Maguire's the other guy who might, his name might crop, it's already popped up, and obviously he's got the New South Wales job, and that's got to be his priority because they showed some faith in Madge. So given those circumstances, I'm not averse to giving, I would say, I think it's not a bad idea to give JD the say, look, we're moving on at the end of the year. We're going to go get Wayne. You can finish the year off and do your best, and maybe you can showcase yourself for a job somewhere else.
Yeah, Todd, and I think that's true, isn't it? I mean, if you don't have the person who's going to replace you long term sitting there ready to go, why do you go through the whole interim coach bit? Why, if JD is willing to go to that the end of that season, isn't that the more sensible route?
I think it's a more sensible route, but then it comes down to the players. If that's what the reasoning is why they're not going well, if they think it's JD, for me as a coach, if I was in that position and I was told that I'm not going to be there the following year because you're not the right man for the job, I guess pride would step in, but you want to be there, but then also you don't. And then for the players, like if they get rid of him, say on Tuesday, say that then you're not going to be welcome here, blah, blah, blah. Do the players then go, well, our season's done. Do we even go out for where if you get an interim coach comes in and whoever that would be, then the players also, then they get a reaction from the players. And then for the club, when that happens, if you get an interim coach come in and there's a reaction from your players and your club and you start winning games, the club can look at it and go, okay, well, Demetriou was the issue. We're excited about the rest of this year and then the new coach coming in because then players are going to buy in to whoever comes in because he wasn't the man. But if it continues to go sour and they don't play well with the new interim coach, that it means it's a player's issue because it falls back to the players then where an interim coach comes in and he sort of steps around and does what he needs to do and goes to the senior players and goes, okay, I'm the interim coach. How do you want to play? I'm going to put my two bobs in where I can, but I'm here just to do a job for the rest of the year. I need your buy-in to help me do that. And let's get some wins on the board and have a really enjoyable rest of the year. But if Demetriou stays around, it might be just kicking stones all year and it's the same old South.
I think the club's sort of their responsibility is to their members and their fans at this point. And I think if they show the signs that they're going to cut a guy loose at the end of the year who's still on contract but not make that call now, I think it shows to the fans and the members that they're not serious about this year. So I think if they're going to cut him loose, I think they probably need to do it now And then they probably need just to bring someone in as an interim and as Toddy said, you know, just see how they go in that regard. But for me, it's again, like the other night, it just shows that they don't understand the systems that are being implemented there, like especially defensively, the space they allowed up the middle, on the edges, their decision-making. If there's a system that's in place there, the players, which has been brought in obviously by the coach, the players either don't value it because they don't think it's going to work, because the first sign of a player not understanding or valuing a system is when the pressure's on, they splinter off and do their own thing and they try to solve problems on their own. And that's exactly what South Sydney are doing at the moment. The second thing is obviously with a coach, you need to make sure that you have belief and you deliver a system or a program with conviction, because if you don't, the players aren't going to believe it. And if you do, as a coach, deliver that system or that program with conviction, you need to be able to hold people accountable to it. You know, and if you don't, and if they come out of those systems and you don't do anything about it, well, then you're showing the players that you're questioning yourself. And I think there's a whole lot of that. There's so many different issues, but I think just defensively, you know, they're just not all on the same page, which means I don't believe that they're really understanding the system, or if they do understand it, they're not willing to apply it, and there lies the issue.
Yeah. Still got, you know, great names in that team. I think like 10 or 11 of that team were in the beat Penrith Anzac Day last year. The talent is there. It's just not happening. And the question both of you guys raised, I guess, is what is it? What does it look like for the rest of this year? They sit in the bottom of the table. Is there a genuine hope for them to be able to climb up? What can they achieve out of this year? That obviously was a question that JD was asked along with the performance itself. Let's have a listen.
Yeah, very disappointing, especially with the 2 week leading that we've had, especially defensively, but a myriad of errors in terms of defensively that we've practiced. 100% we've practiced in and around our ruck, in and around our decisions on our edges, and we're just not nailing them when the pressure's on. Players have to take some ownership of that. It takes some ownership of their own performances and start executing the things that we know we can. But as coaches, we set ourselves a 5 week plan to improve, and we'll stay to that because it's not going to improve in one night. In 1 week, it will get better.
But it's salvageable?
100% it's salvageable. Again, like I said, you see periods tonight where the team looks like the team we're capable of. We've just got to be buying and doing it for longer periods.
JD still has hope for South Sydney and this season. All right, let's flip the coin. What about in the Storm? They were impressive. Cameron Munster was terrific.
Yeah, he's been a bit down this year, Cam. That was probably his best performance this year. And I think that was their best performance. They really strung it together. Their spine were outstanding. Their best players played their best footy. And, you know, when Munster plays like that, you know, they're a completely different equation to what they have been, because, you know, Hughes has been great and Paps has been great and Harry's been great, but Cam just sort of been a bit, he just hasn't been as good as he has been in recent years. And when he is, he's just a world-class footballer. So they look really good. I thought it was their best performance of the year.
Todd, it'd be great to be a Melbourne supporter, wouldn't it? Every week you're in with a shot. They just, you know, they turn up, don't they?
They do, and it's really good for him to see Big Nelson come back. I thought on the weekend was his best game. He's only just got back in there, but every time he carried the ball, his right-hand lever was always ready for an offload. Mm. You mentioned Munster. I thought he was really good the other night. That's been coming. You've seen glimpses of it in the games, but then you've got Hughes on the other side. He's just getting better and better each week. Paps just does his job at the back. And the losing Xavier Coates will hurt. He's a try scorer. He's won games for them this year. So if he wasn't there moving forward, they're going to have to fill that spot. So it'll be a big hole to fill. But I really like the Storm. I spoke about it a few weeks ago, that Storm my team that I think can win the comp, because usually they sort of glide through this time of the year, but now they're front and centre, and they'll be thereabouts at the back end of the year when finals come.
Yeah, I like the fact that those four that you just spoke about are getting some time on the field together, because it just hasn't happened over the last couple of years. And the stats, I think when they play it, they're almost at like over 85% their win rate. So, you know, Pappenhausen's been out for extended periods. Munster was out for early on in the season. And, you know, Grant and Hughes generally play a lot of footy. But having all those four guys on the field, you can just see the continuity that's starting to be created now, especially in that middle part where Harry Grant's starting to form those combinations with Pappenhausen, and he's becoming a real threat. But yeah, I keep saying it, you know, they've won what, six or seven, and I think in three or four of those games they probably haven't been the best team. but yep. they just know how to win footy games. They were certainly the best team the other night, and yeah, they're rolling on.
Tone, just going to say on Xavier Coates. I just got a text from Melbourne.
Do you call him Xavier or Xavier?
Oh, I don't know. Really? Toddy called him Xavier, so I went with that. I just copied the last person who says his name. So the medical staff don't think it's too serious with him, but he's had a history of hammies, so they're being a bit conservative with him. They're pretty confident it's not too bad.
Okay.
That's good news for Melbourne and Queensland.
Excellent news. Beautiful Allianz Stadium, Anzac Day, an amazing ceremony, emotion rich throughout that ground. It was terrific before the game. I was next to Craig Young, one of my heroes. Oh. Then kick off, and I spent the rest of the day having Luke Ricketson laughing in my face. the Roosters absolutely put it into the Dragons. What a difference a week makes, Ryan Girdler.
Yeah, look, I feel sorry for you, Tane. I mean, everyone went in there with high expectations.
Do you really, Girds?
No, I do, because I've really, you know, I've watched Tony suffer now for, about 13 years.
Yeah, we've got so, you know,
it's been a while between drinks, and they had a little bit of momentum. But I just think for the Dragons, it's just all part of their journey, Tone. You know, they're just on that learning curve at the moment where they're finding out what it takes to be consistently a really good competitive NRL side.
Yeah.
And look, they started that game well. They got into the emotion of it. I think it was Zach Lomax then, you know, learning some lessons in big moments. You know, that offload was never on. Oh. They score. And then the Roosters are just that side, right? Like, I mean, they get some momentum and those big outside backs are coming through the middle and Jared's in a mood. They are a really hard footy side to stop.
Yeah.
The interesting part, and my theory on the Roosters over the last couple of years has been, because they've got, you know, one of the best rosters in the competition they have had for a while, is sometimes I think they've got too many guys that want the footy. Like, they've got a lot of footy players there. You've got James Tedesco, you've got Luke Keary, you've got Sam Walker, you've got Brandon Smith. You've also obviously got Victor Radley, who plays that role. Now, I just thought on the weekend, you know, they gave the team to Sam Walker.
Mm.
And I know, you know, all the programs and all the systems now want, you know, 13s to get in there and play with width so the halves get that little bit wider. But for me, I'm not sure that that suits Sam Walker. He seems like a guy to me that on the back of momentum needs to get the football off the dummy half. And he needs to have a license to do whatever he wants. And that's not always going to work. But I just wonder what you think about, you know, like, he's a young guy that's obviously had to wait his turn. You got really strong personalities like Tedesco, like Keary, like Smith, like Radley in there. You're a young half coming through, Toddy. You know, how do you position yourself in an environment like that when you feel like your best footy is getting the football off the dummy half because you're a halfback and that's the way you like to play?
Well, I think that for the Roosters on the weekend, losing Radley brings Sam into the game. So the best thing out of that is that they got to see what Sam's like when Radley's not there. I'm not saying Radley doesn't come back in the team, but you listen to Keary after the game. He spoke about, I'm happy for Sam to take control when he plays like that. The issues they've had in the past is that when he doesn't play like that, he falls away from the game because, one, there's them big players there always wanting the ball, so he has to just stand and wait. And he's not a physical player, so he's not going to push his way in there and just take carries. He plays on the front foot, and when they're on the front foot, but the Roosters should always be on the front foot with the team they've got, the pack they've got, their nine they've got. I'm a bit with the 13s. It annoys me a little bit because sometimes when the 13s get in there, they just want the ball all the time because, yes, they're good at it and it shifts the ball and it gets them, the halves out the back. But sometimes as halves, we want the ball. That's what we're paid for. We want the ball. We want the big moments. When the 13 jumps in, the big moment sometimes goes because they don't see what we see.
That's right.
But it's the way teams are playing to their structure. So it was good to see Sam on the weekend. He just played like he was playing touch football or like he was playing at the Ipswich Jets growing up. It was really good to see. And I think for the Roosters, they'll see that and they'll change a bit the way they play. And it was also good for Brendan Smith. I was watching it from the TV, obviously. Every time Sam called the ball, Brendan Smith went to him.
Gave it to him.
Where instead of going, usually sometimes you go the other way, but he demanded it. And every time he got the ball, he'd come up trumps. But the thing with Sam is, if he goes the wrong play, he backs his kicking game, but he's got a neat little kick, but he's always there chasing it.
Mm.
And the blokes there are pushing with him. So it's really good. It was good to see him back. Here's the difference. He made a hell of a difference for the Roosters.
He was in reserve grade this time last year.
Yeah, he was playing at Wentworth Hill, I think.
Exactly.
And 3 years ago, he won the Spirit of Anzac medal. So he's had a sort of mixed Anzac Day. We spoke to him after the game. He's a lovely young bloke, actually. Really,
got
really
a beard now. He looks like an actual man.
He does. He's a lovely kid to talk to. Obviously, really well brought up. And, I think a lot of people thought maybe as a kid from Queensland who was in the Broncos system, maybe he'd end up going back there one day. And his contract actually matches up with Adam Reynolds. But, you know, he's really committed to the Roosters. He loves living in Sydney, he loves being at the Roosters, and he's happy to sort of keep learning there. So that's huge news for the Roosters because they're in safe hands while ever he's got the number 7 on his back there.
It was a tough start for the Dragons, losing Moses Uli in the first seconds of the game, and then Kyle Flanagan, I think, had to go and do some defending in the centre.
Are you now on board with getting rid of the kickoff, Tone, after
well,
that?
Well, we're going to come back to that because I think that has become a hot topic. Obviously, before it was just hypothetical. There seems to be, you know, a
are
little
you
bit
pushing
more
that narrative, Rudy? It sounds like you are.
No. No, are we?
No. Let's just you can answer the question, but don't go too far. People are waiting. They have an appointment.
I'm not necessarily saying it should happen, but I'm saying I think it will happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Welcome to Tony's Spotting Quiz.
Yeah, Todd, how are you at quizzes?
Not real good.
At least he's honest.
Love it. Well, you're
in good company.
You'll fit right in. Absolutely.
Exactly.
These are very, very simple questions, about sport through the week. Nothing too hard whatsoever. You have to use your names as your buzzers. If you wouldn't mind testing those for me, please.
Ready?
Mm-hmm. Todd. Skipper.
Okay. What did you say, Todd?
Todd.
You did say Todd. Okay.
Todd.
Yeah. Todd. All right. We were talking about Anzac Day, obviously. What's the name given to the paddle used to toss the 2-up coins?
Oh. Ready?
Yes, Todd. Ready?
The paddle?
No. Todd?
I was just going to say the paddle.
Yeah, it would be a great question. What's the name of the paddle used to toss the 2-up
coins? I don't know. I thought it was a trick question.
The flipper?
No. It's the kip.
The kip.
The kip. Okay. Who successfully defended his Australian super welterweight title in Sydney?
Really?
Nikita Zhu.
Nikita Zhu. Bonus points. 5 points I'll give you if you can tell me who he beat. How quickly they forget. Yes, Todd.
Daniel Cronati.
Yes! Well done, 5 points.
It'd be hard to beat from there.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's only 4 questions. Wade Graham is there as we speak, along with Liv
Skipper.
Golf. Yes, Skipper?
Adelaide.
Well, that forms part of the question, not part of the answer. I'm sorry, Sunshine. Okay. Liv Golf is in Adelaide this week. What's the name of the Australian team? That. Yes, Toddy.
Huh? Ready?
Yes, Ready.
The question.
The Rippers.
The Ripper. Ripper GC, the team of Cam Smith, I think it's Matt Jones and Mark Leishman. Oh, here's an anatomy question. I've never gone further out than this. What do you call the little dent or valley that goes from under your nose to the top of your lip?
Ready?
Skipper.
Ready? Is it called a cleft?
It's not called a cleft. Oh, yes, Skipper?
The trough?
No. No. It's called the philtrum.
Ah, good one, Tan.
Yeah, that's nice. Hey, come on, I'm just trying to inform
it's
you.
It's educational,
you know, it's something nice you can go home that's romantic.
What is that, the
philtrum? The philtrum. P-H-I-L-T-R-U-M. So you've got a beautiful philtrum.
That could have been a bonus point. Spell it.
Philtrum, yeah. Well, if you didn't even know what the word
spell
was,
it backwards.
It's tough to spell it.
My specialty.
Yeah, absolutely. This one here is to make Gerds happy in the EPL. Who beat Chelsea 5-0?
Oh, Skipper.
Yes, Skipper.
The Gunners, the champs.
They did. They play Andrews Tottenham, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah,
tomorrow night, which would be brilliant. And finally, who am I? I was born in Queensland. I was a prefect at Ipswich Grammar School.
What's a prefect, Dan?
It's a prefect.
Yeah.
Well, it's below captain and vice captain, but it's sort of on the leadership group.
Ready?
Oh, if it's in below captain, oh, that's probably
I went to Ippy Grammar.
You went to Ippy Grammar?
Yeah.
This person's name is probably on the board then.
Were you a prefect?
Nick Politis.
Did I get it?
No.
He went to Ippy Grammar?
No. Well, it's not
you
him.
You would have been a prefect though, Reddy.
No,
not
I wasn't,
quite the captain.
Sadly, no.
You weren't a prefect?
No, I wasn't, no.
Todd, prefect any at school?
No.
No?
No.
Goods?
No.
I was school captain, but I'm not going to talk about it, okay? I said I was born in Queensland. I'm actually born in Rockhampton. I'm one of 5 brothers. I've played in 6 premiership winning
teams. Skipper.
Yes, Skipper.
Kevy.
Yes, it is.
That's, Kevy only went there 1 year. Kevy. He repeated year 12 for memory. Well, so he could make the Australian schoolboys team.
What are you charging?
That's a trick question because he only went there 1 year. He actually went to a different school.
Did he go to Ipswich Grammar?
School. 1 year, Tane.
Did he? Was he a prefect there?
Was I didn't know he was a prefect.
Yeah.
His last year, I think, was my first year there. Kevy?
Really?
Yeah, there's some trivia. Not that anyone cares.
You've ruined my quiz. Mail. All right, my friend, Lewis Dodd, tell me the story. Where's he from? Where's he going?
Yeah, Lewis Dodd's a young halfback, plays for St. Helens in Super League. Story's actually just gone up on the Daily Telegraph website. There's been a few clubs interested in him, but he's in the NRL, but he's opted to join South Sydney next year, Lewis Dodd. So that obviously has ramifications for Lachlan Ilias. In terms of his future, I'd imagine at South Sydney, but it's a big signing for the Rabbitohs because he's played for England. As I said, he was a St. Helens half. They won the Super League over there. I think they won the World Club Challenge when they beat Penrith. He's got a big reputation over in England. He's been keen to come out to Australia and test himself in the NRL, and it looks like he's landed a home at South Sydney. So we'll have to see the ripple effect of that because I imagine there will be some.
Todd, how do you rate Lewis?
Yeah, he's really good. He's a natural half. He's a seven. He's a controller. So it's very similar to Reynolds. Different. He's a left footer, but he'll complement their team with obviously Walker. So he'll be able to take the whole control. But the thing is, I think he's a left side player, but so that means Cody might have to shift the other side of the field or Lewis play on the right side. But yeah, he's a big signing. He's been over there playing really well. He's won comps. He's won the World Cup Challenge. He kicked the field goal here to beat Penrith last time. So it's a big signing. As you said, there'll be a ripple effect. Lachlan Ilias, Dean Hawkins will probably be looking for a new club now with him coming in. But yeah, it's something I think they need. It frees up Cody. It'll free up Luttrell. And so yeah, I think it's a really good signing.
It's an interesting play, isn't it, Reedy, at this moment by sort of South Sydney, who are obviously, you know, got some big decisions to make in the coming weeks or months with, you know, coaching and the like. How do you go about as a club signing a key player like that with so much uncertainty around the club and especially with their performance this year?
Well, what's interesting, Gerds, is whether Jason Demetra actually... how much influence he had over this signing, because the story says Mark Ellison, the head of footy, is about to go over to England to just finalise it all. I think Ello and Blake have been at the centre of these talks, so I'm not sure JD's level of involvement in it. I know there were some other clubs keen in. The Dolphins were quite keen on him, believe Christian Wolf coached him at St. Helens. So it's a coup for South Sydney, but you know, I really feel for Lachlan Ilias in this situation, because if you remember, it was only like less than 12 months ago, Jason Demetra was saying he was going to be remembered like Adam Reynolds at the footy club. And now we'd think, given what's happened, he lost his spot, got injured. There'll be clubs having a look at Lachlan Ilias. And I reckon the wild card with Ilias will be the Bulldogs. I think there's been some sort of talk that they've had an interest in Lachlan Ilias in the recent past. And I reckon it's pretty well documented that, or well known, that they need a number seven. So I reckon keep an eye on that, whether that's the next domino to fall, whether Lachlan Ilias potentially ends up at Canterbury.
There's a lot of clubs out there that need a genuine seven. And even if they feel like, you know, he's not the finished product, there'll be a lot of coaches out there that'll believe that just given the talent that, you know, he's been able to display so early in his career, they'll be able to work with him and turn him into the player that he can live up to the potential that he's shown early on in his career.
Yep. All right, well, let's stay with the Bulldogs there. What is the latest with Jackson Taupine? Of course, the threats of legal action over the punishments that were meted out to him, the wrestling the team and so on. Where are we at?
Well, it's due to go to court on, I think it's June 13, to New South Wales Supreme Court, just for a directions hearing. And at that hearing, they'll determine dates for a full hearing. And then, you know, it'll be later in the year. And that's when it'll get interesting because... talking to people around the case this week and the legal ramification of it, they're saying that basically the entire Canterbury team could be called to give evidence. Phil Gould, Cameron Seraldo, everyone who was around the club at the time this unfolded last year. So, look, I don't think it'll get that far. I think it'll be settled before then. But The Bulldogs released a statement this week after a board meeting saying we'll fight this to the end. So we'll have to see what the next step is.
What do you make of
it? There's risk involved with that, isn't there?
There is risk involved with it.
Yeah, because, I mean, you need to think that regardless of what people's thoughts are on the situation, I mean, the Bulldogs, the trajectory that they're on, how long they've waited to get themselves in a position where potentially finals look like a possibility, and then all of a sudden they get sidetracked by a situation that potentially could be mitigated with, I guess, some sort of payout, some acknowledgement of maybe they overstepped the mark, and maybe they can build that relationship back up, give the kid a little bit of support. Obviously, he's in a really tough situation, going through a tough thing at the moment. And then maybe, you know, everyone can come out of it benefiting in some way, shape or form. Because the Bulldogs, the last thing that they want to do is have their season get sidelined by something that's happening away from the game. And that's what will happen potentially if you've got coaches and football managers and players, key personnel, all, you know, getting involved in something that could be a distraction at some point in the year for them. I'm just talking pure football in that sense.
Can we talk about the incident? Look, I've never been in a professional football team, so you guys can, you know, clear the path for me and let me know. I mean, it's a very different kind of environment professionally, yet it is still a professional organisation. Surely in a professional organisation, you don't get punished with that kind of physical punishment.
Well, that's the issue for me, Tony. I mean, every club has punishments. You know, Melbourne, they used to roll a wheel at spin a wheel. I don't think they do it anymore. They've rolled dice.
Yep.
But the punishment's been like dye your hair or wash the coach's car. And I'm sure there's been punishments sort of in like this at footy clubs. But the extent of this one's a thing that I find difficult to deal with, because when you ask a young kid to wrestle 30, 35 guys, one after the other, and you can see he's gone, he's shot, and you might make other players then jump on and wrestle him as well. For me, it just feels like it's over the top. But I'm not like, you know, Todd.
Yeah, it sounds like a few good men code red. That's what it sounds like.
Todd and Gerds are no better than me. They've been around rugby league clubs for a long, long, long time. But yeah.
And they have to, you have to be like mentally tough much. And all those things and physically up for the job. I understand it's a different job to, you know, somebody working in an accountancy firm or someone like me sitting behind a microphone. Totally understand that, Todd. But it just seems, I don't know, so too harsh.
Yeah, it does seem very harsh, and obviously it's affected Jackson, which is why he's gone down this path. For me, when I was playing, if I was late or hearing of players being late, it was usually a fine, or as Reedy said, you roll the dice and you have to dye your hair blonde like that. But yeah, to wrestle 30 blokes is a bit over the top, and he's not even established first grade; he's a young kid. I know if you put me back in that position when I was at Canberra, I was nervous to turn up to training some days, let alone turn up late, and then all of a sudden you get told to wrestle blokes like Ruben Wiki and the list I had when I was his age coming through. And it would be. It'd be demoralising because, one, you're not going to be able to stand up to it, and two, you feel obviously the main thing is when you're young and you turn up late, You're already embarrassed as it is. You don't do it on purpose. He's obviously read his times wrong and got there late. But yeah, it's very over the top. And hopefully for the kid that it gets sorted out some way and it doesn't have to get dragged through the media and through the courts and the Bulldogs sorted out that way. And we see what Jackson does best is play rugby league. I don't want to see him lost to the game. And there's talk about people saying, oh, well, clubs want to touch him after this. Well, yes, he's a good footballer. Football at the end of the day does the talking. I've been in positions where people say, well, no one will touch it. But at the end of the day, football talks. Football is your main thing of what you do. And that's what he does well. He's a really good footballer. So hopefully for everyone, and obviously the Bulldogs is the big part, but for Jackson himself is to get the right outcome and so he can get on with his life. And if it's to play football, sweet, let him do that. If it's not, hopefully, at the end of that, everyone comes out of it okay.
Yeah, Tony, I've spoken to a few people about Jackson. And they've all said the same thing. They said he was just a really good young man. You know, great work ethic, really popular amongst his peers. And this would have been like a one-off situation. And you know, for those people out there saying, "Oh, you know, yeah, it's professional sport. these things happen. They need to toughen up. And that's kind of a lot of the mentality that the people that speak to me about it. Well, this guy knows that because he's actually already made it. He's actually been in the system long enough to really understand what it takes to actually be an NRL player. And that's not for everyone. So he already understands that. And look, I've been late sometimes and I've done the wrong thing. Whenever I've been disciplined, I've never been humiliated. I've been embarrassed. And generally, you know, when I was playing, the punishment was always, you know, involving the team because essentially it's a team sport. So what it would be is, okay, if someone doesn't make the time, the whole team does it again. You know, and you do it all together because on the field, that's just the way it plays out, right? Yeah. Like Sivo the other night, you know, no use taking him in next week and making him, you know, wrestle 30 guys at the end of the session because that's not going to do anything other than the fact that he needs to go in there and realise that what he did the other day, you know, put his team in a very vulnerable situation where it allowed Manly to run away with and get the victory. So he's going to be embarrassed by that.
Yeah.
So I just want to, you know, obviously the court of public opinion is going to be very vocal around this situation. He's a young guy. From all reports, he's a good young fella. Going through a tough situation. As I said before, hopefully that, you know, the Bulldogs can understand that they probably in this instance, they overstepped the mark. You look at their trajectory, they're obviously getting a lot of things right and everyone's acknowledging that. Maybe they got this one wrong and maybe the best thing they can do is get some support around this kid, acknowledge what's happened, not push back against it, get the whole situation sorted out so it's not a distraction from moving forward and then everyone just moves on with their life.
Love it. All right, finally, Reedy, Stefano, are you to Ikamanu? What's going on there?
Yeah, look, it's been well documented. He's got some out clauses in his contract, Tone. If he doesn't play two more Origin games this year or if the Tigers don't make the top eight. I spoke to Shane Richardson, the newly appointed permanent CEO yesterday. He's got a meeting plan with Stefano's agent next week to try and thrash things out and work out what they do next because there's been some requests from Stefano's camp to maybe explore his options early before those clauses come into effect or don't come into effect. So I reckon we'll know a bit more about Stefano next week and what his future looks like, but I expect him to go to November 1 regardless of what happens with that clause in the contract.
Des Hasler was seen letting his hair down at several nightclubs in the Gold Coast after the first win of the season for the Titans. What did you like about it, Todd?
I just like the way Kieran Foran's been playing the last few weeks. He's always hard on his sleeve, but he's been really good the last few weeks. After the game, you've seen down on his haunches. He was out, down and out. Mm. But what it's done for him playing seven, it's freed up Brimson. He was outstanding too. But all their players, their effort areas are really good. They're starting to work into what everyone's been talking about. Talking to Kieran through preseason, he was talking about that their defence and their commitment to each other. They haven't been far off in some games, and now they've got a win. I'm just excited to see what comes of it now. They've had a win, and they're starting to develop, like they say, how Desi had them from pre-season. So that's what pleased me, is that they've busted their backside to get a win. They've got it over in New Zealand. Their monkey's off the back. Let's see how they move forward. And winning creates confidence, so hopefully that's what they'll get from that, and I'm sure they will. But, yeah, it's just really good. Always focus on halves because I like to watch them closely. And Kieran's been great the last few weeks.
It must be a massive relief, Ryan, for that club, for that team and for the coach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you just had to enjoy that moment with them because you just know how much it goes into that preseason and the pressure that comes with losing six or so in a row and then losing, obviously, your captain and probably the best player in your team in round two or three. And then just the added pressure of that and not having the standards being driven by Tino not being there. And yeah, so they've been definitely building towards something, Tone. They were obviously, you know, unlucky last week against the Seagulls. They showed up against the Raiders, so you felt like there was a win around the corner, but it's not an easy place to go and get the job done. Anzac Day in New Zealand, take nothing away from that, and yeah, they were just high completion rate. The foundations look like they've been well and truly laid now. They've set a bit of a standard, and hopefully, as Toddy said, you know, they continue to grow from here.
It wasn't just six losses in a row for Des, because he lost his last eight at Manly, I think it was. So he was on a 14-game losing streak, Des. So really happy for him. He's a good fella, Desi. And they, as Gert said, they've been working towards that win. They'd been in games, just hadn't been able to hold on, and they got enough quality there that they should be winning more footy. I mean, Dave Fifita, I thought, was awesome in this game as well. And when Dave's on, they're a completely different football team. So hopefully it's onwards and upwards for them.
Yeah, and I should point out that Des wasn't spotted in nightclubs letting his hair down.
He might have been.
May well have been. What about for the Warriors, though? As you said, it's over there, huge game, yeah. Anzac Day, and they didn't get the job.
They've been very inconsistent this year, very inconsistent. They've thrown away leads, they've run down teams, and I'm not sure what's going wrong, really, because you see them some weeks and you think they could win the comp, and then you see them the next week and you think,
I'll miss the eight.
They're struggling.
There's some concern there, Tone, I reckon, for the Warriors, because, you know, they built their season last year on a lot of resilience, like defending long periods, like the more difficult parts of the game. And that's part of the Warriors that we probably haven't seen in a long time, since the early 2000s. You know, Sean Johnson leading the way defensively, kick chase, all those little parts of the game, they just really embraced last year. And on the back of that, their attack was always going to come. But I just get the feeling that they've gone away from those areas. Like it looks like they're just going out there because they're such a creative side, and they've got guys like, you know, Wade Egan and then Chance, and then they obviously had some big signings in the off season. I think they're probably pretty confident going into the off season with, you know, all the up the wires stuff going on, and you know, what that sort of energy that was created. And maybe they've just gone away and haven't done the work like a lot of other sides to get better for this year. And Reedy's exactly right. I've seen him two or three times now get out to really good leads, but show absolutely no resilience at all, not willing to do the hard work or defend errors and all those parts of the game that they got really good at last year. They've seemed to have fallen away from. And if they don't, you know, find that again soon, and it's not always that easy to go back and you know, especially if those harder parts of the game you're not enjoying, it's not easy to go back sometimes as a team and get into that grind and that rhythm. Well, then the season might slip away from them. Toddy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so, and you're right, Gerz. I think they try and score a lot of points early, and when they don't, they're not one-trick ponies, but when they throw their shape and they don't go away from it. But if that's not working, they don't have a backup plan, they can't just grind back into it. Where I feel if they can start the game by grinding and then make a team surrender, then score their points. But at the moment, they're trying to score off every time they get down there. They run their big shift to shift. And if teams defend it like the Titans did, they obviously held on there at the back end of the game the other night. But, yeah, I think for the Warriors, they just need to go back to some simple stuff, just some basic rolling up the park and kicking. As you said, Sean Johnson leading the way of getting down there, chasing the kick, going back to nitty-gritty stuff, and then their footy will come. I'm not overly concerned that I think they'll fall away, but I think they just need to find a few areas where the last year they had that resilience and effort areas. Once they get that back, they'll form back into a team because they've got some class players, as you said, Chance, the hooker, Johnson, and Roger. So there's got some talent there. Hopefully that doesn't fall off, but I think they'll get it back. They just need to find something different other than trying to score all the time.
Four players with hyphenated names, you know, can't possibly
go. Is that
go
the issue?
That's
think?
The issue.
Can't win.
Apparently, one of them. I've done this many history. Yeah. Never before has a team with four hyphenated names got through in the NRL.
For King G, you wear the crown.
This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum. Believe it or not, 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 not. Believe it or not.
And for our new player, Todd Carney, this is very simple. I'm going to throw an idea at you. You're going to tell me whether you believe it or not and why. Very simple operation. Let's begin. The first two are kind of semi-related, I'm going to tell you. Believe it or not, and as a Dragons fan with a player knocked out in the first second of Anzac Day, I believe it, teams should be allowed to use their 18th man whenever a player is ruled out for a Category 1 concussion. So they're straight, doctor, yeah, they're off, that's it. You don't have to wait for the two HIA failures. You can bring your 18th man straight on.
I wouldn't have an issue with this, Tony, no. I believe it. I hadn't thought about it, but no, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's not a bad idea.
Ryan, believe it or not.
Look, I'd like to believe it, but I think the rule will be taken advantage of, Tony. That's my issue. And we know that, you know, I guess with Category 1, it's a little bit easier to identify.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as long as we don't have, you know, coaches telling players
to lie down pretending to be knocked out.
To lie down pretending knocked out so we can get the 18th man triggered. Hey, sillier things have happened in our game, Tony. But if that's the case, yeah, like I think we could put some parameters around it to make it pretty obvious. And yeah, I believe it. And it would also take a little bit of pressure off the coaches and the players to remain on and try and push through in situations where they really shouldn't.
Todd?
I believe it if I think if it's before the 20-minute mark of the game, so if there's still 60 minutes to play in the game, I'd be happy for it to happen. Because then with a Category 1, you can't really lay down with it either, because if it's Category 1, you've got to miss the next week's games if it's a short turnaround anyway. So it'd be hard for the coaches to sort of play it up too much. I'd be happy with it. Believe it. I'd believe it.
Okay, love it.
Good start.
We could almost go with the 19th man. It was very strong. All right, we're sort of on the same area here because, as we know, Moses Suli went down in that first tackle, and it was from a kickoff. Believe it or not, and I'm going to play some audio as well here. I'm going to listen to Robbo after the match, but listen to this. Believe it or not, it's time to change the kickoff. Let's have a listen to the East Roosters coach.
It's a really hard one, you know. I love kickoffs. I think, you know, that set a statement to how we wanted to play today, but we don't want to see that as well from Moses. So, yeah, it's a really hard one for me. I think we can see we're getting to the point that that needs to shift. They tried to do it through the short kickoffs. It's not enough. Field position is still a really big part of the game, so you need to get down there. So I think we're getting closer to a change.
Robert says we're getting closer to a change. Believe it or not, it is time for that change at kickoff. Brent Reed?
Look, I'm a bit with him. I don't like it. But I think it's inevitable because I think that's the path rugby league's going down. We've seen the end of the shoulder charge. Everyone threw up their arms when the shoulder charge got banned. I threw up my arms when the shoulder charge got banned. But we don't miss it anymore. Mm-hmm. So I, as much as I like the kickoffs and the spectacular collisions, I just think the game will eventually go in a path where we don't have them anymore. I don't know what the answer is. That's the problem. Actually, I was just thinking about it then.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon you would have to change. So rather than kicking off from the halfway line, maybe you have shorter kickoffs and you kick off from the 40 or the 30 of the opposition team. So it reduces the amount of space between the sides. Because, I mean, if you just did short kickoffs all the time, then teams would just march down the field so easily.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the shoes on the, you know, everyone's got to do the same thing. So it would balance out, essentially. Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. You would be straight away in an attacking position. But yeah, there'd probably be a few teams that would perfect it and get the ball back as well. So, Tony, I just think there needs to be probably a little bit more emphasis put on tackling technique. Like, you look at Moses Suli charging down there the other night and, you know, he was so upright and, you know, outside backs trying to go in there. And even though they're physically, you know, big enough, trying to put shots on front rowers, you know, there's going to be sometimes bad outcomes. So just maybe a little bit more of a focus on, you know, because that's not something that you train at, or that first, you know, it's all about the intent, obviously, of the first run. But, you know, the side going down there to defend that, there's no emphasis put on how they do it. It's just like, oh, make sure you go in and put a big shot on. But maybe, like, you don't see guys like Jake Trbojevic getting knocked out, and he makes 40 of those tackles a week. So maybe the emphasis is a little bit more on, you know, off kickoffs, make sure the players get down there, and it's the technique is a little bit, you know, they're more prepared and the technique is a little better.
Yeah. Todd, before you do the believe it or not, on that though, you've been involved at captain coaching as well. But in terms of that tackling technique and the upright nature, that's what happens now. You hold the ball, you make sure, you know, it's face to face. So those collisions head to head are bound to happen.
Yeah, they are bound to happen. It's the players that put their bodies in front. And Moses Suli obviously flew into the tackle. And you see it in Origin a lot too, that the collision early. I think it was last year, someone flew into the collision and they reeled out of it and they'll out for the start of an Origin game. So there's obviously always repercussions of the kickoff, but I mean, Gerd just said it there before, like when there's a long kick, so if someone kicks it from their 30 and the fullback catches it, he has to bring it back just as far. Like, do we then start stopping the long kick in footy? Like, because he's got to come back into the middle of the pack. So it's a... it's a tough one because I'd like to see it because I don't want to, as a fan of rugby league, you don't want to see what happened on the other night to Moses and you miss him for the game. But then also it's been a big part of rugby league. And I know Reedy said about the shoulder charge and stuff like that. once it comes in, it won't be missed. So I guess if it does come in, like, it'll be weird at first, but if it doesn't, it's better for the game and benefit for the players and blokes' health moving forward. I'm all for it, but it just changes a few things.
But you're absolutely right. What does it change it to? A start of the game with a tap on the 20 metres, it seems a little bit, the build up to the state of origin, then somebody taps the ball at the 20, doesn't have the same kind of impact because it's a moment. You know, that kickoff, it's a huge moment, particularly in those huge games, final football, state of origins, where everybody wait, and it does give you a clear indicator who's up and about immediately. So it is a tough one for the...
Life moves on though, Tony. You know, I think... I think we'd miss it for a while.
Mm.
And then how many kickoffs are there in a game? There's, you know, some games there's only four, five, six kickoffs. Like, you would move on. We would move on. The game would survive.
That's right. People said we're going to miss the scrum, a contested scrum.
Yeah. You know who will be disappointed? The front rows that chase their stats.
Yes. Yes.
Easy meters. Get those extra meters after the Monday morning. Oh, what was my stats? How many carries? How many meters? They'll be filthy if it goes because they won't have that extra 30 meters.
Love it. Believe it or not, Todd, Nicho Hynes will be the New South Wales 5-8 for game one.
If he was picked, I would believe it. It's one of those things. I think Nicho's...
It's too late then to believe it if he's already been picked.
I just think that if he's going with Cleary, I was talking about the other day that if you pick Nicho at six, you have to play Nicho's style of footy. But you can't play Nicho's style of footy because Nathan's the man at New South Wales, so he'll be at number seven. Where when you the way Nicho plays at Cronulla... His hands on the ball. He's in everything. And I'm not saying that he can't change his role to play Origin outside Cleary, but when you're not getting the best Nicho Hynes, because the best Nicho Hynes is a bloke that's hands on the ball, kicking, running, doing whatever he can. And we all know what Origin's about. And I'm not saying he's not going to handle it, but his style, the way he plays at Cronulla, won't necessarily stand up in Origin because you've got Isaiah Yeo that touches the ball a lot, Nathan Cleary that touches the ball a lot, and some middles that like to get the hands on the ball. So I think if they go with him, he'll have to change the way he plays, and if that's okay and he can be comfortably do that, I think he'll be the man for the job. But I'm a bit like everyone's been saying that there's obviously Jack Whiten, but you'd have to ask him if he wants to come out of retirement. He's an Origin style of player for a six, or if they stick with Luai, a bloke that they've had there together with Nathan and Isaiah Yeo, because I'm sure them two will be picked. But if he was picked, I'm not going to complain.
Ready? Believe it or not?
I don't believe it. I reckon Mitchell Moses is the man. I reckon if he's back in time, he's got the bye this week, then I think there's... Brisbane, Melbourne, I think it goes. There's three games after the bye for him to get back. And I reckon if he plays two of them, I reckon Mitchell Moses will play six.
Okay. Gerds, believe it or not?
I don't believe it. He's also a right side player, and I think that's what side Nathan plays on. That combination that Nathan has with Isaiah Yeo is going to really make it hard for Nicho to do what he needs to do. So I'm all about, you know, picking big, aggressive outside backs for this one, trying to go, like, through Queensland, and hopefully Jack makes himself available and we can throw him at six. I reckon that'd be a great halves combination.
Triple M Footy lives on Listener, thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water.